Here it is, August the 1st, 1998, and I'm interviewing Peter Vandenhorst, who has been a longtime counselor here at Camp Kewaunee, and who has, I'm sure, beat some impressions to make about what you remember about the program and the campers and counselors here at Camp.
Well, as you said, I came here in 1974. I came as assistant waterfront director, assistant swimming director. Mm. Mike Harrison was the director at that time. And he was there for, I think, only 1 year, I'm not sure. But he and I worked, no, maybe two. He and I worked together for a couple of years, and then I became swimming director, and I've been there ever since.
Right.
I've not moved around at all. Over the years, we have maintained similar programs. The SLS, the Senior Life Saving Program, in 1976, I think, changed to Advanced Life Saving, ALS, and then in 1995 or so like that, turned into Lifeguard Training, LGT. So it's basically all been the Junior Life Saving, the JLS, along around the same time in 76, turned into what we call BLS, Basic Life Saving.
Okay.
But the Red Cross calls it community water safety and basic rescue or some such thing. I'm not sure what. But we call it BLS for ease of, or, you know, continuity.
Who were some of the assistants that you've had over the years? I think about some of the campers, or I know you have what used to be called the Master Camper Program has changed into more of a training program for younger fellas, and then I guess your sister Louisa worked with you, and there have been just a number of others that have been with you over the years. You want to explain a little more, or maybe you want to go on with the program? I was thinking of.
No, that's basically it. We follow the camp program, that, you know, the C levels, the B levels, the A levels, whatever. Actually, both sisters have worked in swimming with me, Polly and Louisa.
Polly, oh, that's right. I think I had that.
That was many years ago. I don't remember exactly when, though. Mm-hmm. It was before Louise was married, and I don't know how long she's been married either.
It's been,
I'll bet you, 10 years since she's been out here. Mm-hmm. And Polly was before that, and actually Polly worked at the Inn for a while. Mm-hmm. Then I came over here as Baker.
Uh-huh.
And the family joke is that, you know, Polly was in college and did what college kids do, which is mostly stay out all night. Mm-hmm. And she had to be in the bakery every day at 5:30. And Bates would, and she would drive, she was there. She would drive herself up to the bakery every day at 5:30. And Bates would come by with his chainsaw every day. And always said that he could set his watch by Polly.
By Polly, she was there.
Polly couldn't see any. But she was a great baker. Louisa was wonderful in the department they both were.
Yeah.
Also, I worked with some other old Kewaunee names. Jim Kenny worked on the waterfront with me for a while. Scott McMinn was in boating, I think, my first year. Mitch Greenwald, of course, was head of boating when I first got here.
He got there. Okay.
And Minnie.
He must have come after Chuck Hoffine, at least.
Yes.
Chuck Hoffine was in boating.
Mm-hmm.
He was my assistant. And then I guess Mitch must have taken one.
Yeah, Mitch was, I think he may have been here in 72 or 73.
Uh-huh.
But he was well here when I got here. And I remember because Mitch had broken his leg.
Yeah, okay.
So my first impression of Mitch was the boating director with a cast.
Oh, boy.
But he was also a music teacher in Copley, Ohio, so he and I did the campfires together.
Oh, that's right. You would have had.
I've got a picture of
him.
Mitch in his crutches and me and my guitar walking around the campfire somewhere.
Yeah.
Also, active down there was, let's see, Scott McMinn, Moss Chapman, Mark Chapman, and his brother Ken. Mm-hmm. Jim Kenny, of course. Both my sisters. Then, let's see, 1 year after DeWitt, you know, all the DeWitt people came here, there was Al Kent, I think was his name.
Mm-hmm.
He was a waterfront director at DeWitt, and he came and worked with me for 1 year. Then he went off to the Vatican to become a priest.
Mm-hmm. Now, DeWitt, that was another camp that we kind of, Is that the time we amalgamated with another group of counselors for a year or two because the camp closed and we got some of the boys? Was this the one from New York State? Or
New Hampshire.
This was the New Hampshire camp.
Right, they were on Lake, I forget what.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why I was wondering, because Mike this morning, Altmaier this morning, mentioned that how we'd gotten the Spanish boys, mm-hmm. a lot of them, was from a camp in New York State, that I had never known how that first really, we'd always had some from Cuba and maybe mm-hmm. some from Venezuela, so it wasn't a new right. deal, but the actual influx of from Spain, I wasn't sure how that occurred. And so there have been just a number of camps over the last mm-hmm. 20 years that have gone belly up that I guess Kiwanee has had.
Yes, and now how the Spanish campers heard about Kiwanee after Camp Idlewild, I think it was called, mm-hmm. but someplace in New York, mm-hmm. folded, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But once it started, it's been continuing.
It has spread.
Word has spread throughout Spain that you should come to Kiwanee.
Well, tell me a little bit about, before we get on too much in the program, you know, with the years, tell me a little bit about how you first heard about Kiwanee and how you got kind of involved with the program.
Well, that goes way, way back, because my father, who was Dutch, born in Holland, when his family came over, the first time, they came over twice, the first time, they settled in Englewood, New Jersey, and met R.C. Frank.
And this would have been in, what, the early 30s?
Or? Yeah, roughly. Mm-hmm. And R.C. said, well, I know where you should go in the summer, mm-hmm. and brought them all up to Weld. Interestingly, my mother, when she was growing up, vacationed near Farmington at Clearwater Lake, mm-hmm. but they didn't know each other. Then they got married and discovered they had this thing in common, and they knew about Weld and what have you, so they started coming up. Then along came me. So ever since I was born in 50, mm-hmm. My parents, or before that actually, my parents came up here. Mm-hmm. So I came up here and vacationed here as a little boy. My parents wanted me to come to camp as a camper, and I would have none of it,
right.
none of it, because I would take one of those old scows that Stanley Williams had, come around the point, look at camp, and it looked so dark and so forbidding, and it scared me to death. Mm-hmm. So I would go home. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, they also brought me over to camp, which I had to walk through these huge forests to get to
right,
camp.
Right.
And I don't remember this, but they tell me that Franny Frank, who's Camp Mothers in Town, was so nice to me, and gave me cookies, and took me around camp, and I just wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. Then I got, went through growing up and went graduating college, what had you, got married, first year teacher, which was not a pleasant time. It was also first year of marriage. Mm-hmm. And in January sometime my father called. We were talking to him and he said, what are you going to do this summer? I said, we don't know. We don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. And he said, what about camp? And I had never thought of that. And all of a sudden it sounded like a great idea. So then my next step, so I was convinced, because this is part of my boyhood, and then I
flew home, right? With your parents having the cottage.
So my next step was to convince my new wife that this was probably mm-hmm. the greatest place in the universe. The only time I'd ever been up here was in the first weeks of August, when the weather is crystal clear, and the days are sunny, the nights are cool, and not a bug in sight, and that's the way I described it to her. So we got up here early June, did nothing but rain. The mosquitoes were as big as airplanes, and Nancy was at the inn, mm-hmm. cooking. She was the breakfast chef at the inn
I
was a kid, and we lived at the inn. Yeah. And the weather was awful. It was a miserable summer. But somehow we came back the second year, and we've been coming back ever since. In fact, the one year, 1982, I started graduate school for my degree, mm-hmm. and I went in the summer. So I didn't go to camp in 82. Nancy did. So I lived in, so she went up to Maine, she came up here.
She came up here while you were...
While I was in Kansas City, mm-hmm. boiling to death. It was miserable. And so I would call her and she said, we're having a great time!
Yeah.
So, oh my God, I hate this place.
Yeah.
So, but that's basically it.
Yeah, that's interesting how various people, we were just riding around the lake last night. We saw the Folda cottage, and of course I remember John Folda lived right across the street actually from my aunt in Columbus, his dad being a professor at Iowa State. And it's just interesting how so many different names come up, and some have lived around the camp, and especially some of the gals, you know, who have brothers who have come. There are fathers, like the Alexanders, you know, and so forth. Well, as we look then at the program, how do you see the camp changing over the years? In other words, do you see, by the time you came in 74, Walter was pretty much, Walter and Jane were pretty much running the camp.
Pretty
right?
much, yeah.
And
for 2 years, I think.
So that perhaps a lot of the newer approaches or whatever, not that it was extremely different, but some of the changes had already been made.
I think that's right. I have, and this is probably its greatest strength and interesting, I don't want to use the word weakness, but interesting, something interesting, in that over the last 25 years or so, I've noticed very little change. There have been minor changes in the program.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have things in swimming we didn't have back in the 70s now. And there are other things, you know, we have kayaking, we have a few things. We have thin walls. But the basic philosophy of the camp is the same. The way basically it works is the same. As I say, I think it's one of the strengths.
Yeah.
Because this is, Nancy and I have moved around a lot in 25 years. We've moved in 4 or 5 states and had 5 or 6 or 7 jobs and what have you. And this place has always been our rock. This is this has been home. This is where we come home to the same people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is like coming home.
That's the good entree into some of the people that you feel have made the camp just what you say, a home for campers. I know I still feel that way. Mary, my wife, we were just married in April, and where do you think we ended up the first summer? up here, and she was half-time secretary, in the office there and so forth. So there is something, you know, the first 24 years of my life, 12 of them were spent up here in San Juan. So there is something about that does draw us back. But perhaps to mention some of the names of people and maybe some of the responsibilities and contributions that they've made to the camp would be interesting to hear.
Well, we were talking about Jock Duncan before, and his son John was the counselor when we first started out, and of course, John has gone to do great things medically. But his other two sons, Mike and Tim, were also campers here. And Tim was, well, they were both phenomenal, but Tim was quite the swimmer. And I will never forget in my whole life, Tim and his two cohorts, Jim Otley and Frank DePaul, Eric DePaul, who were, especially as master campers, quite the mischievous boys, if you will. And one time, boy, I'll never forget, I looked out in the lake, they had taken a sunfish out on a perfectly calm day, and were just capsizing it and riding it and capsizing it and riding it over and over and over and over and over. And they got to do a lot of graces for that one. But those, you know, so there's those folks. Other names that I've, you know, that have come up that I've worked with, Carter Messick and Will Fleming, and his brother Ed, Doug Fleming. Everybody wanders back for a visit, if nothing else, at one point. Jim Garland was a biggie down in swimming. And he came back a couple years ago to visit. Everybody eventually winds back up, winds up back here.
Right.
Somehow.
It's great. Yeah, there was a Bob Page, for instance, who came back to see, I guess, his son. And he had been a counselor about in 46 or 47 when I was here. And I'm sorry I missed it. But
yeah.
You just practically every week, I'm sure there are. And he hasn't been back for 50 years.
Bob Page, where does he live?
He lives in or at least I think his family came from Englewood, New Jersey. I think he may still be right there in Englewood.
Okay, so it's a different Bob Page. Because there's one near Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
But that would be too much.
Yeah, right, if you happen to know him.
Well, there are all kinds of stories. When I was growing up, Jeannie Dexter,
mm-hmm.
was my babysitter.
Oh, is that right?
Right, and Forrest Dexter and Ruth Dallas, they lived in one of Huck Williams' cabins across the road from us.
I see.
So we always knew the Dexters,
you
and
knew
Steve
the Dexter.
Dexter, and oh yeah, we always knew them. Mm-hmm. As I said, Jeannie was my babysitter.
Mm-hmm. That's
so it's a small world.
Yeah.
And there are two. One story I remember is that Jeannie, for some reason, was on the Princeton campus. I can't think of why or when or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But she, just for something to do, yelled out, "Oh, Kalani!"
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, somebody said, "I hear you."
Yeah.
And I don't think she ever bothered it, but.
Yeah, somebody did that, I think, in Paris, too, at the airport. It's remarkable.
It happens.
People are around.
It happens. Now, one of the boys' teachers in Edinburgh, his wife's grandmother lives in Naples, which, of course, is where Lucy Ramsay, the nurse, lives.
Uh-huh.
And Lucy's husband owns and runs a mobile station in Naples.
Hmm.
And as luck would have it, one of his old customers is David's wife's grandmother. It's Gaga. It's a grandmother. So they're going to, and she's worth a fair amount of money.
Yeah.
So they go down to visit her quite a bit. Yeah. And at one point, I said, "David, listen, look for a tall guy with a mustache, because it's got to be Wayne." And just go up to him and say, "Oh, come on, and see what happens."
Yeah, yeah.
So David's up for anything. So
now,
he
this
did.
Is David.
He's a voice teacher at Edinburgh.
Oh, I see.
Non-Kawanian. So he said, "Okay, sure." So we walked down. He found a tall guy with a mustache, walked right up to him and said, "Oh, come on in." It wasn't Wayne.
Oh.
It was just somebody else.
Oh, yeah, the guy thought she must be nutty.
So he never, he said, "No, I don't think I'll do that again."
I've never had the nerve either, but I think it would be fun to see what happens.
Well, everybody we know knows about the camp. Because it's kind of what you talk about at home.
Mm-hmm.
And the camp has always been fertile friend, proving ground, if you will, for counselors.
Yeah.
Because they've been, counselors stay together forever. But I've also discovered that over the years, it's been good for senior staff, too. Because the Compers came here 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And, we still, and the Belskises came here in 74-3, same as us. And, so there's long-term there. The Compers came in about 85 as well, I think. 83.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. They didn't stay, they're not here now, but Bill still comes up, and we still maintain contact with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the camp has proven to be for, various age levels,
mm-hmm.
has also proven to be glue, if you will.
Yeah.
For friends.
It is. It's a nice setting to come in the summer.
Oh, isn't it?
And of course, knowing people and having worked with them so much makes a big difference. Are there any other episodes that you might think of that they may be out of the 80s and 90s that you'd want to share as far as any particular strange water meet affair or any other event? Now, we haven't talked, for instance, yet. I don't know whether there needs to be too much more said, but on the fire of 77, were there any particular perspectives that you gained that you'd want to share on that?
Well, the fire, not surprisingly, was one of the scariest things I've ever been through.
Uh-huh.
Nancy and I had just come back from a day off.
Oh.
And we were upstairs in the dining hall because we lived there.
Yeah.
We were changing to go to dinner or do something.
Uh-huh.
And we heard the building, felt the building shake and heard this thump.
Is that right?
And we thought, oh, and what was that? Well, and then, so we continued, and pretty soon we started hearing people yell, "Get out, get out."
Oh.
And I looked out the window to see what was going on in the back window, and I saw the back end of a car.
Yeah.
That's all I could see, was the back end of a car. And everybody's running around screaming.
Mm.
And at that point, that's when I realized they were yelling, "Get out, get out, the building's going to blow up."
Yeah.
So I said, okay.
You better move.
And at that point, Florence Bateman came tottering out, because she was Alzheimer's and old. And so I scooped up Florence, and John Kramer was in there for some reason.
Mm.
And we all trooped down the steps carrying Florence and walked out into the lake.
Uh-huh.
And John and I, he carried her for a while, I carried her for a while. We went out into the lake, and the building would come, boom!
Oh my gosh.
It was very scary.
Oh, Lord.
And then I will always remember the mass feeding area over by Campcraft with the, and Herb really rallied to the occasion.
Oh, really?
Herb Birch. Uh-huh. He was quite something. Nancy was the baker that year. And you know what I think is the most amazing thing in the world? They had, well, obviously no kitchen, no nothing, and they had food in every freezer and well, I think.
My gosh.
The inn, at the general store, at the other store, various homes around, mm-hmm. and they had lists. You know, so much chicken here, so much steak there, whatever. They never missed a meal. Sunday they still had pies and homemade bread, and life continued.
Yeah, I think to the marvel of a lot of people, not only here, but you know, home.
Yeah.
I know we heard about 10 o'clock that evening when it happened, and the Blouse got up here right away, mm-hmm. and other people came to try to help. And then we came up the following week at, for our regular stay at the inn, mm-hmm. and the kids were coming up to eat up at the inn.
All walk up to the inn for the noon meal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and then Herb was just running around, you know, just being a cheerleader the whole time.
That's right.
And I will, I've never seen Nancy so tired. She was just great.
Oh, yeah.
The kitchen was just going bananas.
Yeah.
But they never missed anything. Oh, birthdays were still celebrated. They still had normal stuff on Sunday. It was rather amazing. And my parents were up. That happened while my parents were there. So we stayed with my folks.
I see.
Until they went home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I will that comes to mind is weather. Normally the weather's pretty good.
Yeah.
And but we've had a couple of really amazing years. And the first one I remember is 76. Mm-hmm. I think that was the year John took ALS actually.
Okay.
I know that was
the year he was up here.
We retrained in 76. It was 75. It was our second or third year here anyway. And I have never been so cold in my
right.
And Fritz Monroe was the, oh, Fritz is another one I worked with a lot, and Mark Sandler.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Fritz was teaching what was then ALS, in a wetsuit, and these kids were going out in the rain and the wind for their final test, and it was miserable. They must have been frozen solid. And then we had another one like that 2 years ago in 96, when Hurricane somebody really came up.
Yeah.
And we, once again, had no beach.
So was that the year that you had to put the crib back on five times?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was quite the year. And then that was 96, and I have pictures, photographs, you know, of the whole thing sort of keeled over, people standing on it in water up to their knees. They should be on the dock this high up.
Right.
And they're in water up to their knees, and things caved over man. And then that was 96. 97, I was not here, and now it's 98.
So, yeah, and this year, I guess, you had a wet June, but it kind of settled down so you could get the diving tower up.
It's about normal. The lake level is about normal now.
Oh, yeah.
But when we got here Tuesday before camp started, again, there was no beach. And the water was lapping up around the rock wall, which and we couldn't get the docks in until the end of the first week of camp. The water was so high.
Yeah.
It was really quite something.
Now, you've done an awful lot with the Sunday church service in the music area, because that's your specialty the rest of the year, too. Would you have some impressions? Has the format of the church service changed much since you've been here, or was the general pattern of music and so forth, set up before you came?
The general pattern is the same. Mm-hmm. Herb, again, is in charge of the overall service. Mm-hmm. And so from year to year, the actual order of worship, if you will, is identical.
Uh-huh. So he's been doing that.
But, let's see, when I first got here, we sort of made do with what we could do. Mm-hmm. And again, this was about 70, gosh, I don't remember, but early, 5, 6, 7-ish. Maybe it was 6 or 7. We started the Camp Pony Choir for boys.
I see.
And Peter Brown was a little guy, and David Kindle was a little guy, and but there was son of a jeweler in Columbus, whose name I forget now.
Well, there was Harrington, also Argo and Laney.
Argo. That's who it was. Peter Argo and his brother were in it, and a few. And we, you know, we rehearsed once or twice a week during rest hour, and we sang the church services and that happened. That didn't last but 1 year.
Oh.
For whatever reason, the interest waned the following years, and that was it. When the Confers got here in 83, Bard's the soprano, Chuck's baritone, Nancy's an alto, and I'm the tenor. So we had a built-in quartet. So we've been doing that ever since. Adding and subtracting campers and counselors as they come through. But the core, four core, has remained the same for 15 years. Been very helpful.
Getting training going on.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you know, there's four people that know what they're doing and how to do it. So you never have to worry about that. They can read the music, they can learn the music, and boom, done.
Is there any other music done during the week? We haven't even been down in the evenings, any other days of the week. I know years ago, you know, RC used to have kind of a sing-along on a Wednesday or Thursday night. Of course, that was when there weren't, say, films. I don't know whether they're using films here anymore or not. They did for a
while. Not for a long time.
But
Wednesday or whatever day used to be movie day.
Yeah, movie day.
And they haven't moved for a long time.
They haven't done that. So I just didn't know whether, you know, Roar, Wildcat Roar,
right.
I used to sing that kind of song. And,
right.
And some of the old Princeton and Yale songs. But I guess that has long since.
That's pretty much died off. When we first got here in 74, and for a number of years thereafter, there was you know, Sunday Vesper service, and there was always some kind of singing before that.
I see.
We don't do that anymore. The campfire singing still goes on. I find now that I am unable to sing, so I don't do the campfire singing anymore. I can sort of get through the Sunday morning, and that's okay. But there are counselors and what have you to do the Sunday morning, the Saturday night campfire.
Saturday night, yeah.
And that's better, actually, because they're younger, they're closer
to
my age and interest. I'm just an old funny duddy.
No, but I think it's true that they see their some of the counselors they work with in other activities, their own lodge counselor or whatever. It would add a little more zip.
Sure. And that was me when we first got here.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm rapidly closing in on 50, so it's not me anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing, even when you think about GR, you know, and RC, when they first started out here, they were much younger. They were in their 30s.
Sure.
And so you could picture GR going out on a sailboat and being involved and playing baseball and stuff like that, but as the years go by, then other people take over that role. So, well, I'm just thinking of anything else that we may have missed as far as program. Do you have any impressions of the directors of activities or impressions of the camp mothers or any other kind of tripping? I don't know. Of course, I know your field has been, you know, pretty well defined,
right,
as you said. And, but I didn't know whether there was any other activities. Nan, of course, Nancy worked in the kitchen, and any of her impressions on the working behind the scenes and the preparation of meals, or that you can recall anything she would.
No, I remember she was a baker, and she was head chef. And she was baker again. And but what she really wanted to do was work with the boys more directly. So now, I think 10 years ago, she went to archery.
Has it been that long
so
already?
It's been a lot.
Yeah.
I know, boy, time flies.
Oh, I know.
As far as DOAs are concerned, my lasting impression is one that it's a job I don't want.
Right.
Because it's a hard job. And it's, I bet you, I don't know, but I bet you anything is a thankless job. Because you are, at the same time, responsible for keeping the kids motivated and active and happy. You still act as the administrator for all the counselors.
Right.
And any problems that come up come right to you. And I do that all winter. I don't want to do it this summer. But I think overall, you do a very good job.
The program is pretty well held the same way. I mean, the campers still sign up, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Activities. And maybe the first week or two, do they have kind of a structure to introduce first three?
Mm-hmm.
So an awful lot of the program really is similar to the way it was when
very
I was a
camper. Very similar.
It was quite a while ago.
No, I'm sure it's very similar because there are still the four periods in the 11,
uh-huh.
4 o'clock free time,
yeah.
After dinner games and what have you.
Right.
They all follow a schedule and go to activities by lodge during the first three and a half weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sign out of or into the activity they want to be in,
mm-hmm.
For the last half of camp. And that's where we are now.
Yeah. We still have fun even, we get up to about 6:30 or whatever, and up there at our cabin at the inn, Kwani Inn, and yet I'll hear that bell at maybe like 1 or 2 minutes of 7, and then I'll hear it at like 25 or 20 minutes. That was
yeah.
the first bell for breakfast. And,
oh yeah.
You know, it's just
you still have
picture
first bell, second bell, third bell,
yeah.
rest hour bell. It's
yeah.
all the same.
I think
it's one of its strengths because it is something you can count on.
Yeah.
And when people come back and visit and that bell rings, they know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's good. And I don't have any real problem with change, but I have a problem with change for change's sake.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if there's a good reason to make a change, fine, do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just want to do it because you've been doing it the same way for however long and you're tired of it, that's not a good reason.
No.
There you go.
Peter, here we are, continuing our discussion here on your experience. I'm here with Peter Vandenhoenert, and we're discussing pranks and jokes and what occupies the counselors from time to time.
Well, there are two incidents or several incidents of duking that I remember stand up vividly in my mind. They were both around 1978. The duke at the time, I think, was Bill Albershart, who was a marvelous duker, very creative duker. At one point, a swimming area was set up such that it was movable, and at one point, Bill and a few others moved the entire swimming area to Sunday Beach, so that when we got up in the morning and came down to the beach, the swimming area was gone. And somebody eventually found it at Sunday Beach, and they spent the rest of the morning, you know, bringing it back. But
mm-hmm.
it was amazing. Bill also, that was the year nature was duped unmercifully, much to the chagrin of the head of nature, who was Henry Chuck at the time, I think. And every night they would get in there to do something. One famous time they put a moose looking through a telescope at the stars, a moose head and what have you. And as I say, Henry never could figure out how they got in because he locked the place and double-checked it. And it never occurred to him that it was his assistant that was the head duke. John Traynor was in the middle of all that. Shortly thereafter, maybe in 1979, I don't exactly remember when Timmy Duncan was, I think, a JC, and Timmy Duncan and Eric DiPaolo and Jim Otley were still here thick as thieves, they decided to duke the Estabrook Spikes one night. So at 2 in the morning or whenever, they very carefully snuck down to the Estabrook's cabin, brought the bikes back, and their intent was just to stick them on the high dive so they'd be sitting on the high dive in the next morning. Unfortunately, in the midst of all this, they knocked one of the bikes in the water. So they were panicked, and so they dove for the bike. At 2 in the morning, these three guys are diving for this bicycle in 15 feet of water. They finally found it, and they brought it back. They got it up to the surface, brought it in, and they were so terrified of what they had done or what was going to happen to them, they very carefully snuck the bikes back to the point and went to bed, and nobody was ever the wiser. I don't remember how the story got out, but it surely did get out,
uh-huh.
and it was very funny. Uh-huh.
Well, this just, you know, adds to the many, many different stories that took place. Some of them, you know, played on GR, and I know we have one, I think Hal Myers mentioned one that dealt with his automobile, and they had taken the spark plugs off or something. And so after dinner, GR always got into his real flashy
mm-hmm.
Mercury or whatever it was, and drove off. and the campers were all around, as usual, at the office there. Mm-hmm. And so he gets in the car to turn on the ignition to leave, and nothing happens.
Yes.
And so that's just the beginning, you know, of the excitement. And so I guess that was one thing that Kiwanee counselors, and including GR and RC, had to recognize, was that the boys were going to be playing pranks.
Boys will be boys. I think duking is probably an integral part of camp, one that I was involved in 1974. Oh. We took Frank Finetto's boat out of the water, sailboat out of the water, unstepped the mast, and brought it into the rec hall and re-rigged it in the rec hall. And left it there. And they spent some time trying to figure out how to get it out.
And are there any Duke of Zorro types of things going on now?
No,
we don't hear much about it. Kind of a tame period. Huh?
And the old time Dukes, such as moving the swimming area, were pretty creative and very funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
Not destructive.
A few years ago, somebody got a magic marker and started putting Z's on kids' foreheads when they were asleep, which is not very creative and not very clever.
No.
But that last couple of years, that's subsided
quiet.
And it's been pretty quiet. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Peter, for getting together with me today on the first day of August, 1998, here at Camp Kiwanee to share some reminiscences.
My pleasure.